Welcome to The Grow Show, powered by Steel. The Grow Show is brought to you by Marty Grinder's Grow Group, where we specialize in teaching landscaping companies how to clarify their platform, grow their people, build their processes, and realize profits. Everything we teach is grounded in real experience. Our team is actively involved in the day-to-day operations of Southwest Ohio's Grinder Landscaping Company. New episodes of The Grow Show are released weekly on Wednesdays. Remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Now, here's your host, Marty Grinder.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever the case may be. This is Marty Grinder from Grinder Landscaping Company and The Grow Group. Thanks for downloading The Grow Show, powered by Steel. Today, we have Brett Ochtenhagen from Seasonal Services. They are located in a suburb of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You're going to really enjoy today's episode. But first, a reminder, you can get the latest edition of The Grow Show delivered to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Or watch us on YouTube for an enhanced learning experience. The Grow Show is the greatest thing since spring. Yes, spring. It's on us now, and it's just great, folks. The smells, the excitement, all of nature's rebirth. I love fall, but spring is undoubtedly my favorite time of year, and it's exciting to be back working outside in full force, growing and seeing our teams improve here at Grinder Landscaping Company. And the hundreds of landscaping companies that we work with at the Grow Group, they're all doing new things. It's fun. Now on to this week's edition of the Grow Show. Brett, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Marty. I'm glad to be here.
So I've got my challenges today because you are actually a professional broadcaster. I am more of an amateur, so we'll get into that in a little bit here.
But you do not get paid.
Well, you're still a pro at it. You're a very successful landscaper, and I hope I pronounced this right. You're in a Milwaukee suburb of Maquanico. Is that how you say it?
Yes, you got it.
Maquanico, Wisconsin. You're married, a family, and have a family. In fact, you have a family business. Can you give us a little bit of background into Seasonal Services, how you got started? Tell us about your family and where the business is today.
Yeah, I grew up on a farm in Maquanico, and we had a couple of farms. And we raised quarter horses and beef cattle. And I was competing with the quarter horses quite a bit growing up, and it was enjoyable. We had stallions and rebred mares. And so it was a great way to grow up. I was outside all day long, every day through the whole year. And I remember my mom, especially in the summer, she'd kick us out of the house at 8 o'clock. We'd gather around the patio at noon for peanut butter and jelly and Kool-Aid and get back out unloading hay wagons or swimming in the farm pond or riding horses, whatever we could do. And we were just not allowed to be in the house during the day. And I loved it growing up that way. I did have an entrepreneurial family. My dad owned a water conditioning company on top of it. So we had the cattle as a revenue stream, the water softening company as a revenue stream, and the quarter horses as a revenue stream. So I was kind of used to seeing 3 or 4 checkbooks laying around on the kitchen counter and parents who spent the night doing books and, you know, in front of the TV doing their books and trying to just keep everything organized and going every day. And I loved it. I loved being from an entrepreneurial family. I didn't know what it would turn into. I don't even think that I knew what entrepreneurial was, but I grew up in it. And I think I learned about entrepreneurs in probably college. But when we were doing the farm work, the development started to crowd in around the farms, and we had a dump truck, a bulldozer, excavator, different types of tractors. And my brother and I would go out, and when we were, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old, we'd go out and put in lawns for people for extra money. And I don't know how we found the time growing up on a farm, but we did, and we loved doing that. Then our neighbors were a big home building family, and they built tons and tons of model homes. And this was in the late 70s, early 80s. And we would go out and load up lawnmowers because we had a couple of lawnmowers on the farm. We'd load them up in the stock trailers. We'd sometimes hose the cow dung off of the outside of the trailer, at least. Loaded them up in there, and we'd go mow the model homes for this builder that we grew up near. But it was great. But all the way through high school, I'm like, I want to be a businessman. And so I went to University of Wisconsin Whitewater, started out in the finance program, quickly learned that that wasn't for me either. And by default, I wound up with a degree in psychology. Wow. And it turns out that that was a pretty decent degree to get.
100% it was.
When you're working with a lot of people. And of course, it helps with the clients too, because we know some of our clients can be a little crazy. So
right, I hear you.
But after college, I started dating a beautiful young woman named Amy, who we've known each other since kindergarten. Our families, they lived out in the rural part of the Maguanago with us. So she was the girl next door, kind of, even though she was 2.5 miles away. But married the girl next door. And I just, you know, she was kind of entrepreneurial. And we thought, what are we going to do? She had a good job. And I was really interested in trying to figure out what to do. I had gone to work selling Cadillacs and Jaguars for a local, right after college, for a local Cadillac Jaguar dealer. And I really loved selling and got a lot of training there. And that's probably where I learned about entrepreneurs, because I sold Cadillacs to a lot of people that were, had different types of businesses. And I was always, I remember being more fascinated about what they did than selling them a car. So, yes.
But that's probably how it should be, really,
right?
Because you were selling it for the right reasons. I love it. Continue. This is awesome. Vince told me, I don't know you quite as well as Vince knows you, but we have some rapport together, and Vince told me that I would love talking to you, and he's right. We got a lot in common. Keep going.
Yeah. So I do watch some of your videos and some of that stuff from when you first started out, and I think a lot of people listening start out in some weird way, right?
Yes, and, exactly.
You know, but it turns out that through all of this, I really loved physical work and being outside, which of course I inherited from growing up on a farm. And so I started a bit, my wife and I started the business. She had a really good job, so she funded it. And I started actually with my brother. My brother had incorporated while I was away at college. He incorporated, he got a degree, but he went to school locally. And so he wound up incorporating a business and continued to do work for this builder family and grew it from there. I came home for the summer and after college, and I started to do that. And I really enjoyed it, but I did not enjoy pushing a spreader or riding a lawnmower as much as I enjoyed putting in a retaining wall. And so I started to focus more on that. Well, family businesses sometimes work and sometimes they don't work. And so my brother and I were at each other quite a bit, and our mom would come over and referee sometimes. But at the end of that summer, winter, I decided to start out and separate from my brother. It all worked out well. He's still a landscape contractor. We're in the same area, but we compete in two different market sectors, and I'll explain that in a little bit. So we incorporated in 1994. A couple weeks later, Amy came home and said, "Guess what? I'm pregnant." Okay. So that really was the motivation to really get it going and make it work. So our son was born in January of 1995. 1994, I earned $70,000. 96, I think we were in the low $200,000-$300,000 in revenue. And we just, you know, started to grow from there. And I moved to the family farm. I was doing it out of a property that we owned, Amy and I owned. And we outgrew that within a year or two. So we moved to the family farm, and I wound up buying the family farm. And I'm trying to think, other interesting things along the way is, and this kind of goes into about marketing. I earned the Future 50 Award for the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. You probably have something like that in Dayton.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I won the Future 50 Award, the Young Entrepreneurs Growing Companies. I won that 3 years in a row. I became an Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year finalist. And that got us publicity and, you know, all these different exposures. And so we just began to grow and grow and grow, and it was fun. And I'm sure you can relate. And, you know, we wound up being 100% focused in the high-end residential marketplace.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know, what your business mix was exactly. So, yep.
Yeah, it wasn't that way at first, but we've grown into that area. And then we're in Waukesha County, which has, you know, 25 or 30 lakes. So there's a lot of lake properties, mostly primary residence for people that, you know, live or work in Waukesha County or Milwaukee. And this year, our budget is $15.5 million.
Yep.
And one interesting thing now is I'm working on a succession plan.
Yeah, fun. So much in common. Did you ride Western, I assume?
I did both.
Yeah.
I did English and Western and roping.
So my dad was a reiner. We'll have to talk. I had a Shetland pony that pulled a cart. I'll show you a picture sometime. I rode Western. You were probably a more accomplished cowboy than I was. My dad rode reiners and was really good at it. So it was amazing what he could get a horse to do.
I've been to Congress many times in Columbus, yeah. Ohio. Yeah.
Yep. Well, then you probably know Sean Flaherty, who's actually my father's passed away, but he was a friend of my dad's. Yeah, a little bit of trivial there. Your business mix, mostly high-end residential, $15.5 million. What does seasonal service do better than others? How do you stand out in the sea of sameness?
There's a lot of things. Number one is we developed a very precise definition of who we are. 5 years ago, we started applying the EOS principles.
Yep.
And we developed a VTO back then. And
what is VTO?
A vision traction organizer.
Yep.
So, and one of the primary parts of that is identifying who you are. And so, for example, we developed our core value. We've had core values for 20 of our 30 years. We've always been big on core values. And while I was at Whitewater studying psychology, I took Shakespeare. And so our core values are founded on ethos, pathos, and logos, ethics. Yeah. Ethics, yeah. Passion, and logic.
Yeah.
And I won't bore your listeners or the listeners here with that, but it's a three-legged stool. And, so we have statements about ethics, we have statements about logic, and statements about passion. Logic is learning, or the brains behind it. Pathos is passion, of course, which you have to have. And then ethics is how do you operate right way.
So whether somebody's following you or not, I think I'm following you. Very logical, pardon the pun, well laid out way you're doing that. How does that help you sell more work? How does that help you attract more people to the company? How does that help make the culture of seasonal services better?
Well, our core values and the ethos, pathos, and logos, that's our North Star.
Got
that's
you.
That guides us. That lays over the top of everything. And then our niche is we deliver joy to others by designing, crafting, and nurturing beautiful landscaping. Our target market are people that admire, enjoy, and respect creativity, quality craftsmanship, technical expertise, and extraordinary customer experiences. And then, of course, we have geographic, definitions of who we're serving, how far we'll go, our typical home value that we try to work with.
There's some of the stuff that's maybe a little academic, but there's some really good nuts and bolts things. Like you're talking about a service area, you're talking about a homeowner value. I mean, there's a lot there that would help even a brand new employee into seasonal services understand what you're doing, I would think.
Right. And there's a couple of other things here. We have a motivation. And so all of these things we're coloring in the picture.
Motivation.
Is people and entities that value well-designed and maintained landscaping and see it as an inspirational, motivational environment for their family, friends, clients, employees, and guests. And then our last one is three uniques. Our technical experience is priceless. Our competitors' inexperience is costly. We get it right every time. On the rare occasion it's not right, it will be shortly. And then our unique ability to fashion cherished emotional connections to life outdoors.
How many people are on your team, Brett?
About 100.
How hard is it to drive this philosophy that you have down in the organization? How hard is it, and how are you doing that?
It's training. We talked about training offline, it's living it. It's getting these things. We have signs around our facility that talk about these different things. and, you know, talking about some of these things, but we have to live it. We talk it. And then we have a lot of people that have been here 15, 20.
That helps.
Yeah. And they live it through. Our production manager has been with me for 30 years.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
The guy who's at the top of coordinating all production on the design build side. So a couple other things that set us apart is we have our own masons. We have our own concrete fit flat work people. We have irrigation and lighting. We do not
too much.
Subcontract. Yeah. The only things we subcontract are really asphalt and carpentry. I am going to start a carpentry entity pretty soon. It's so hard to find carpenters.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so
if I were a aspiring landscaper, I'm trying to get to a million and I'm talking to you over a cup of coffee at Starbucks and I'm completely enamored with what you've just told me. What would be the first couple steps you recommend the smaller companies that want to grow that have joined us here today on the Grow Show Powered by Steel? What would you recommend they do?
Define who they are and what they want to be.
Okay.
And then stick to that. I think most of our competitors, especially those that never seem to really rise above 3, 4, 5 million, is they're trying to be everything to everybody.
And why is that problematic?
Well, you cannot differentiate yourself if you're trying to be everything to everybody. And so you need to have a unique, our three uniques are, you know, part of that, but this whole background, this whole picture that we've painted with those statements I shared with you really help people to understand what our mission is. What is it that we're trying to do?
Right.
And, you know, for example, we're the highest priced company in our market, and I cannot sell to people that do not care about landscaping, that are not passionate about it, that I can't go to a corporate center and get them to spend $1 million to upgrade their landscaping if the owner of that business doesn't care what it looks like.
Right.
And so that's really what we found was the key.
So how many years have you been in business overall? 30 plus. How many is it?
94. So 31 years. This is our 32nd
season. 32 years. How many years did it take you to figure this out? Because what I find in the entrepreneurs that we work with in the Grow Group, in our peer group, some of the younger guys that are growing that were where you and I were, you know, a long time ago, these are things like, it's so good for a new entrepreneur to hear what you're saying, because the faster you can define who your customer is and who your customer isn't, the more successful you're going to be. That's just a fact. It's very hard for us to say no. Was there a defining moment when you understood this? Were you not making money? How did you see the light here?
It's an onion that gets peeled back layer by layer, but I would say there's a couple of things that I don't know how many people really identify this. I think you probably will. When we were hitting 5 million, it seemed like the wheels got wobbly.
Yeah.
And it was very difficult. When we hit 10 million, the wheels got wobbly. And at 15 million now, our wheels are a little wobbly, Marty. It's
mine
very
are too.
Hard.
Mine are too.
To figure out how to get over these. Right. And so, but when you break it down to your core values and sticking to what you know the best, you get a reputation amongst people that want that, and they help you grow your company. I think another point was 2008. We had a lot to figure out.
Oh gosh, yes.
Yeah. I remember the bank calling me and saying that, because I owned the family farm, it had a very high evaluation. It was on our books. It was a $1.6 million asset, and they had it reevaluated, and it came in at $650,000.
Oh gosh!
And they won $300,000 by the end of the month, and that, you know, that just really shook me and started, you know, because I didn't think anything or anybody could ever take this away from me, and that was really something where I had to start to put more systems in place. I felt naked. I felt vulnerable. And at that point, 2010, 2011, we really started to get serious about systems, and all these other things. So even if you're at 300,000 or 1.3 million, you're going to have those situations, and they define you, Marty. They truly define you, and it's how you respond to that. And quite frankly, some people throw in the towel, and they shouldn't. Well, maybe they should.
I think it's either you learn it and you go or you don't. One of the things you do that is different, and this is one of the biggest things I wanted to share with listeners, is you have a weekly gardening talk show on WISN. It's a very popular radio station in Milwaukee, and it's every Saturday at 1. You're on the radio. You've done this for a long time. Tell us about this. Tell us how you got started, how the show's evolved. How does it benefit seasonal services? Talk to us a little bit about this.
So it was about 2008, and this goes back to, we can talk about, maybe get into this a little bit, but you know when you're struggling, how easy it is to want to cut advertising?
Yes.
Instead, I went all in on the radio. And so I was advertising 2008, 2009, and the lady who did the, so this was like Saturday mornings in Milwaukee, they have, this was How To Radio.
Right.
You know, they have Mr. Fix-It I was on at 6 a.m. and I had to drive an hour to the studio every Saturday morning. I'd get up at 4:30. For 10 years I did this, 11 years. Drove down to the studio, did the show at 6 a.m. And then the Fix-It guy was on. And then it was the travel lady, it was the finance person, it was the remodeling expert, and that went till 1 o'clock. And they asked me how it came about. Is the person that was doing the gardening show, they separated, and they needed somebody to do this show, and they asked me if I wanted to do it. And I thought about it for like 9 seconds, and then yes. And Marty, my first show, I couldn't get a word out. My mouth was so full of paste and I was so nervous.
Yeah.
It was awful. It was awful the first couple of weeks, but not now. It became second nature. It's great. But yeah. That was a
I've listened to you a few times and you are very good. Yes.
It was a call-in show. So I just answered questions. You know, I used to prepare half an hour, and after the first year, I never even bothered preparing, really. I would write something down on a slip of paper. And I had a host sitting across from me, the great Jim Peck. He did. He was a game show host from Milwaukee, and he came back after he did the Joker's Wild and some of these other things. He was a great host, totally helped me figure it all out. But it was great, and we did that for about, on WTMJ, that was, we did that for about 12 years, and then WTMJ got bought out by a company, and they went from being, and WTMJ was a conservative-leaning but neutral show. They had, I don't know if you ever heard of Charlie Sykes on, and some of these other guys. They were extraordinarily right people, but the station did a good job of kind of keeping everybody listening, and then they started to switch more towards the left, extremely left, and their listenership went down, and I had to get out of there because the values weren't aligning with me. So I know you want to know how, if people want to do this in their marketplace, you can probably get it done pretty easily, but just make sure that you find a radio program or a radio station that has the listeners that are in your target market.
Yeah, and that would make sense. You know, people that you could turn into customers.
Yeah. And now during COVID, we started pre-recording. So now I pre-recorded from a studio in my office, and I pre-recorded on Wednesdays. And now I'm on another conservative station that had the famous Mark Belling for 35 years. He was a big conservative guy. He sat in for Rush Limbaugh. So this is, but one of the things is I am not overtly right in my approaches.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah.
I do patriotic commercials. I do a lot of commercials. So the show doesn't cost me anything, but I committed to X amount of dollars of spending every year. And every 3 years, we renew the contract and I have to increase my spending by 3%.
Yep. So, I mean, this is kind of a stupid question. I think I know the answer, but if you had to do it all over again, you'd do all this, right? This has been a boon for business.
It has. I go to restaurants. Nobody sees my face, but I go to restaurants and every weekend in church, people call up and say, I really love your show. And it's my son doing it now, and he's getting...
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That is so funny. Just to share a common thing here. So I do something here in Dayton. It's called Good News in Dayton. And if the listeners want to go to goodnewsindayton.com, since 2008, I've been doing these one-minute segments. They're on all week long in the morning drive time on the number one radio station here in town in Dayton. And it's just people doing good things that the news doesn't pick up. And it's funny. I'm a lector in my church, and I cannot tell you how many times after church someone has come up to me after I did the readings, and they said, you know, I figured out who you are. You're the Good News in Dayton guy. I recognize your voice. So it's the same thing. Now, I've never gone to a restaurant and have someone say they recognize me. So you got it up on me. But I can see that. That is something, the consistency. There are people on Saturday mornings that are sitting around the house, working in the garage, cutting the grass. I could see where that would be a boon. So great job here with the radio station. Let's talk about a couple other things. Everyone talks about social media marketing, Google Ads. The radio endeavor, does it surpass those? What are you doing right now to generate more business and grow? Even if you're just trying to sustain at $15.5 million a year, you still got to be finding new clients, especially if you're doing high-end design build work. What are you doing there? How can you help us?
Well, our goal is to establish one relationship with one high-end builder every year. Okay. So we have 9 or 10 high-end builders that, and we have exclusive, some of these gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, they give us exclusivity. So we work alongside of them, and they sell the home with our package included. And it's fantastic relationship.
So the builder basically tells the customer, you're going to work with Brett and his team at Seasonal Services.
Yes.
Yeah. And that means that you do great work, and that means that you take care of them. I mean, that's not that to get a builder to do that is not easy, Brett.
No. And I wish more did it, because it really works out to go. These builders that we do this with, it's very smooth. And we wind up more or less, Marty, expediting everything outside of the walls of the.
And then they're not babysitting that. They know it's done. They know it's handled. And if they're smart, they know it's going to make their product look awesome. You can have a beautifully built home and it has $20 worth of landscaping in front of it, and it looks awful. You can also, quite frankly, as we both know, you can take a home that maybe isn't that stylish and do some things with landscaping that can add a lot to it. So landscaping plays a big part of that. I love that. Is there any other tricks you're doing with that?
I love LinkedIn. We try to post a couple of times a week. You're a big LinkedIn fan.
Yes.
Marty, every time I sit down in my chair at 8 o'clock at night and I open up LinkedIn, it's Marty Grunder. I don't know how you do it, but
we work pretty hard at it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love LinkedIn, Brett. It's not gotten political. It's stayed down it's stayed very professional. There aren't people on there airing their grievances for the most part. I think it's really good.
Yeah. I love Howe's. The other thing I'm big on is our trucks. I think our fleet is roughly in about 40 vehicles. Most of them are under 5 years old. They are always, we have a truck wash on site. They're always clean. They're always organized. If they get a dent, they go to the body shop. If a trailer gets a scratch, a big ugly scratch down the side, we will spend $5,000 to repanel all that aluminum on the side of that trailer and relogo it.
Why do you do that?
Image. A dent is just... It's like when you were in high school and you got that pimple right on the end of the nose. Didn't affect your character at all, but wish you didn't have it. So
I think things like that, and I've seen your marketing. You've already been on here. You've talked about how good you are. I love it. I love the confidence. And I think that when you talk like that, you also got to walk the walk. The trucks have to look good. We can't be giving a prospect or a client any reason to think we're not who we say we are. And driving smashed up trucks, having people looking unkept, job sites that look bad, those all, I think, cast doubt. Like, are you really who you say you are? I hate to be negative, but I really do not think United Airlines employees and management read their marketing, because there's just such a disconnect between who they say they are and they call themselves a friendly skies. I just encountered another United Airlines flight attendant last week when I flew to Denver. He was not very nice at all. So I think taking that stuff serious and fixing dents, it says a lot. And I also want to applaud you there because I think that's a silent teacher to the team that we are excellent in all that we do. I'm going to bet that the crew bathroom for your folks, I haven't been to your place. Vince has told me it's lovely. I'm going to bet the crew bathroom is clean there. Am I right?
Well, we're on an old horse farm, and so they have a couple of porta-johns in the morning. Yeah. But the offices, there's three or four bathrooms throughout our facilities here that are that have running water, and they are all spotless. We pay somebody to clean the office every week.
I knew it. Are there any other marketing tactics that you highly recommend that would help our listeners today on the Grow Show powered by Steel?
Yeah, a couple. And I want to get into one a little bit deeper. Uniforms, yes. I'm a sucker for a button-down Oxford shirt. And in the field, everybody wears polos, even the concrete guys. And the awards, do awards, get the awards. And then finally, my favorite thing
when
of all.
When you say awards, you mean like submit for landscape awards in the state, locally, house, whatever there are.
Yes, and safety awards and anything that you can do to get your name out there. We just won a gold award for a project, and it's going into Milwaukee Lifestyle Magazine. We bought advertising space in that magazine, and it's all over Facebook and LinkedIn.
And I think that's a rally cry for your team, too. To, you know, if you're watching us on YouTube today, to pound your chest, like, look at me. Look at what my team did. And a chance for them to be recognized. That's cool. That's really cool.
And then the big one is I'm a Catholic, love all. Anybody that chooses to go to church on Sunday and hold themselves accountable, I don't care what denomination it is, just do it. But we support, I'm trying to get in every Catholic school and every religious ed program, they all have folders for their kids. The schools have folders, and you can advertise on those folders. So we're in our target market, which is probably about 30 Catholic churches. We're in bulletins. We're doing the religious ed folders and the school folders. And those sit on, I can't tell you how many times I go into somebody's house and there's one of those folders sitting on their phone center full of papers, you know, with the school calendar in it or, you know, the homework assignments.
I'm going to look into this. My wife just retired from teaching at a Catholic school, kindergarten, for many, many years. I'm a product of Catholic schools, grade school, high school, and college. I'm going to look. I've not seen folders like that by us. Maybe I need to buy some folders for Incarnation Parish here and get something started. That's a great idea. It's top of the mind positioning. It's getting a piece of one's daily routine. I love it.
And it's inexpensive.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Let's move on. You're in one of our peer groups. What lessons have you learned from the peer groups? I know you value training. I've seen your team everywhere. I was speaking in Wisconsin last month. Your team showed up. You send people to our events. You seem to me to not be sitting still. Like, you are focused on training. What have you learned from the peer groups? What role does training play in your success, please, Brett?
I like going to the group of men that I'm in this peer group with. We're best of friends. And it's been, I don't know, six or seven. I think we started in 2018. And I'm on the phone with one of them daily. And one of the things I like is when we go to these meetings, we have, it's very intense, as you know, right? We're there for about 48 hours and we're up at 5 o'clock, on a site by 6:30.
We're not out late carousing and we're not goofing off. I mean, there is some goofing off, but it's there to work. There is a very great sense of intentionality towards getting better and accountability as well.
I'm snickering about not out carousing late at night. That does happen once in a while.
Okay. I'm glad I don't know about it.
We're held accountable the next morning. So it does work. And I'm almost 60 now, so there's a lot less of that. But I love sharing the financials. We all compare each other's financials. It's open. It's candid. It's how you doing this, how you doing that. So for anybody listening, a peer group is a significant investment of money and time.
It is.
Not terribly significant. at 15 million, but at 1 million, Marty, you'd probably agree it's a bigger, much bigger commitment.
I mean, I would have, I hope, had there been peer groups when I was at a million, I hope I would have been smart enough to make the sacrifice to join, because I learned so much from our peer groups. I mean, in a sense, I'm in all of them. And they are, it's one of those things, like, you don't really understand it until you're part of it. It really becomes a sense of camaraderie. There's brotherhood, sisterhood. You're sharing your wins, your losses. You got somebody you can lean on. I think especially, Brett, you may find out that you don't have some strange disease. It's not treatable. Like, everybody's dealing with the same stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It's it's very much, you're not alone type of a thing. And I agree. And Marty, when I was, before I had the money to travel and do all that stuff to be a part of one of these peer groups, I was part of a peer group at the Milwaukee Metropolitan Association of Commerce. I would get in a round table, or at the Waukesha County Business Alliance, they have round tables, or at the Milwaukee Builders Association, they have round tables. And these, some of them are included in membership. Other of them are $600 or $800 a year to be a part of these things. But there is ways. And then another big thing, Marty, peer groups, seeing each other's facilities.
Yeah, it's huge.
Huge. And then we're going to Italy in September, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, that is, my wife and I did that in 23, Brett. It's an amazing trip. You're going to have so much fun at the estate that you're going to. Eduardo there that owns the estate, it's amazing. You're going to love it. You know, you speak about the visual side of learning. I see there are some offerings that they're virtual peer groups where they do them online. And I could see that being effective to a certain point. But I think the experiential learning that goes on when you see someone's facility, when you see how the owner interacts with the team, or maybe doesn't interact with the team, when you see a truck set up, when you go out and look at a job site, there's just so much, at least it was for me. I think it's probably the same for you. By putting my hands on things, by seeing them, where I have visited in my 30 years of having the Grow Group over 250 landscaping companies. Grunder Landscaping is where it is today because of all those lessons, those best practices that I have taken, layered on mine, go out in the marketplace, teach it. They make it better. I see how they made it better, layer it on top. It's just like this mode of continuous improvement that makes a difference. I thank you so much for not just being part of our peer groups, Brett, but for sharing, because you get out of those groups what you put into it. And I know what you put into these groups.
And Vince, we forgot about Vince and Jennifer Murray. Yeah, and before that, we had Jason and Jason New and some of the other guys from McFarland Stanford. It is, I strongly recommend it. It made a difference.
Vince is a tremendous facilitator. Jennifer brings a vibe there on the finance side that is unmatched. It's been good. Getting ready to wrap this up, we're with Brett Ochtenhagen from Seasonal Services. They're in a Milwaukee suburb, wonderful company, having a great discussion today on the Grow Show. Let's wrap this up. When I think of you, and you came to our field trip that we do in partnership with NALP last year in Chicago, and you brought your, you had some family members with you. And I know how tough it is to work with family. I don't think it's tough if you do it right. So you must be doing it right. How have you made that work, working with family? What are the do's and don'ts?
Listen to Amy, number one. Listen
your
to
wife.
Amy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mama Bear.
Yep.
She is the smartest of the whole group. So we have a leadership team or executive team that of seven of us. Amy is on it. My son Brady, who's 30 years old, and we're grooming him to take over. But I've also some of these seven people, some of them are older, my generation, and some of them are younger. You've met Mike a couple times now.
Yes.
I'm beginning to put a team around the Brady, and because Brady's probably going to wind up taking over by the time he's really significantly invested, will be about 20 million. I took over a $0 million firm.
Right. Exactly.
And I was able to learn along the way. He's going to be thrown in to, you know, instead of fishing on a boat in a little pond, he's going to be fishing the Bering Sea.
Yep.
And you need to know what you're doing, and you need a good team around you.
Amen.
And so that's what that's all about, is the succession side of that. But really, we talk at home, we talk at holidays, we go up to our cabin up north on a beautiful lake way up in northern Wisconsin, and we there it kind of goes away after an hour or two, Marty, and we fish and we swim and we have fun and and we have fun together as a family. And eventually you run out of business stuff to talk to. And when we're up there, it's a magical place. And so it seems to go away. And that's our best times as a family. And Marty, I'm going to be a grandpa for the first time. Brady's wife is due in a couple of weeks here.
I have two grandchildren. It's great. Come on in. The water is warm.
Yeah. So maybe that's it's a boy. So maybe that's going to be third generation. And then my daughter is expecting in late May.
Look at all this stuff you have to look forward to.
Yeah. So family is really important. I didn't work out with my brother. I love my brother. We're still friends. That didn't work out. Somehow or another, this does work out. And it is not always, there are challenging times.
So my oldest daughter, Emily, she works at the Grow Group. You've met Emily. And this is some new news. My son, Grant, is joining our company in sales in our Cincinnati office. We have a new office down there, one in Dayton, one in Cincinnati. They're about 45 minutes apart. Yeah, thank you. What advice do you have for me as I get him prepared to be successful?
Get a team around him. Again, he's going to be inheriting a $15 to $20 million company. And you're having some good growth too. And get a team around him. And our team includes a lawyer and an accountant.
Yep.
And our lawyer has been with us for 25 years. And he can tell us how it's going to be sometimes, but it needs to be like that. These are expensive endeavors, but without them, I don't think that the business maybe keeps going on without them.
Well, I think in the future, I'd love to have you come on with your son and your wife. We dig a little deeper into family business because, you know, quite frankly, companies are finding a very hard time finding and keeping people. And, you know, the family, there's a pro to it. They'll give you the benefit of the doubt, probably more so than a regular employee that's not a family, but there's some challenges there. And I think your attitude towards it and what you're doing, having outsiders meld into it, I think you have a very reasonable approach towards the matter and it's working well so far. And I wish you the best of luck going forward with it.
Thanks. One other thing, Marty, is Brady does have, I have a coach, a gentleman who coached me for 15 years locally here. And now he's coaching Brady and one other person. He's coaching Mike and meet for an hour and a half separately each week with the coach. And that helps bring in that a little bit of new knowledge, you know, a different way of seeing things. So relying on others, Marty, maybe that's where we leave it is you can't do it yourself. You need experts, including the Grow Group and Farland Stanford and all these great companies out there and locally. Your attorney, your accountant,
and you're not saying this directly, but you're humble and your humility to seek help from others and realizing you don't have it all figured out and you can't do it alone. I think it's rooted in that kind of an attitude. I see a lot of people that scoff at peer groups. They scoff at doing other things. I have somebody helping me with my health. I have somebody helping me with my finances. I see it as a way of pushing me and holding me accountable and making me think. And yeah, I do spend a lot of money on that stuff, but I think it makes sense. And hopefully the successes that I'm having and being able to share these lessons with others are proof that it's working. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I agree. I agree for sure.
Brett, it's been a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for sharing. People can obviously go on your website and see your company. If you come to Grow, if you become a member of our peer groups, you can meet Brett. And then if somebody wanted to listen to your radio show, can they go to the website and listen to that?
I think we have a link on our website, but you can go to iHeartMedia and just type in Brett Ochtenhagen and it will come up. It's called the Designer Yard Show. And we record on Wednesday.
Yeah. And I've listened Saturday. To a few of them. I enjoy them. I probably really enjoy them because I know you and I just think it's cool what you're doing. I don't have a radio show and I wish I did. This is kind of my radio show. So yeah, it's working. I thank you for sharing. I thank you for your support. I thank you for your friendship. It's been great having you on today, Brett.
And thank you for everything you do for me and for all of us out in landscape land, because Marty, you bring a lot to the table. And for those that are listening that don't know, Marty. You got to find him and get to him, and he is approachable, and it's just a great resource. And if Marty doesn't know how to help you, he knows somebody that can help you for sure, right?
I probably know a lot more people that can help you than I can help you myself. So that is a very true statement. Thank you very much. So folks, that's going to do it for this week's edition of The Grow Show powered by Steel. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to The Grow Show. And if you can, give it a rating or a comment. That helps more success-minded landscape professionals find us. And if you really want to help us, share this episode with your team. If you're listening to it on your phone, text it to a friend, a mentor, or any landscape pro you know. That helps more people find us, and that would be really nice of you to do that. Thanks for joining us this week on The Grow Show. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Grow Show. A special thanks to the folks at Steel, whose support makes this podcast possible and whose outdoor power equipment makes our jobs easier every day. Remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and head to growgroupinc.com to learn more about our other offerings or to find more information to help your landscaping business. We'll talk to you next week.